Welcome to the Reader's Roundtable edition of Cattlecast with Jessica Trotter, Mari Garza, and Cheryl Lindemann.
Welcome back to Cattlecast Reader's Roundtable. I'm Jessica Trotter, and I'm joined around the mic by Cheryl Lindemann and Mari Garza. Hey, ladies, how you doing?
Hey,
hello.
Yeah, happy New Year.
Okay.
Still okay to say that?
Yeah. It is totally weird. I figure we can say Happy New Year for a while. We need to positive visioning, think
yes.
Happy New Year.
Absolutely.
So it's 2022. We are still in a pandemic. We are still trying to read. We are still doing library programs. So, hey, one of the things we want to talk about today is an upcoming program getting started now.
Yeah, I want to invite everyone to participate in the Winter Reading Challenge at Cattle. It gets started on January 18th and goes through the month of February. 28th is the end. And we are asking everyone, hey, let's get cozy together this winter as we read books about just cultivating empathy, inclusion, just wellness of soul, your physical body, your home space, everything. We're talking kind of like it's a regular challenge that you would find on our Beanstack site. And there are badges that have to do with families, taking care of families, maybe, you know, caring for animals, expressing yourself through art.
Thinking about the
nature.
Environment and,
exactly.
Existing in nature.
Yep. Embracing winter.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
Another one.
And we do have reading lists for each category on the suggestions. But you can read whatever you want. You know, you don't have to read from that list. And if you complete your challenge, when you complete your challenge, I should say, you will have earned your choice of a hot cocoa that you can pick up at any of your any of our branches, plus a scented bookmark. Who doesn't want a scented pine tree bookmark?
Yeah. Was that the scent?
We're also doing some drawings, too. So, yeah, it's currently featured on our website where you can sign up, or you can also just look for cattle.beanstack.org, and you'll be able to get to the site and sign yourself up.
Remind me, what's the completion? Is it a couple of badges, or is it?
It's three badges.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, very cool. And you can choose your scented bookmark, right? And there were all sorts of scented options.
Yes.
Okay.
For those of us of a certain age, scratch and sniff
type. Yes, yes. Go scratch and sniff.
I remember those stickers. Those 80 stickers. It was so cool. And the pizza one was kind of gross, but you know, it was. You had to try it. The chocolate one, you.
Yeah. So I'm of that age. I don't know if they even still do this, but when they used to send you like all those perfume advertisements,
I remember
envelope,
like in magazines.
You'd open it. You do this with your wrists on the piece of paper.
I remember them falling out of magazines.
Scratch and sniff at its prime.
So we've got a little retro aspect to our reading program this year.
You know, if you go and take a look at the list, and again, don't have to use anything on the list, but we did. We spent a bit of time putting them together. So oddly enough, I think almost all the books I'm talking about today made it onto one of the lists.
Awesome.
I think all of them, but I'm not absolutely for certain about that.
That's cool.
But those are fun to do and an interesting, you know.
Yeah.
I wouldn't, you know, obviously, repeat, you don't have to use any of the books on the list, but they're fun lists to kind of look through.
Yeah,
they are. And it was fun. We were able to incorporate, for me, I'm a nonfiction selector. It's fun to put some nonfiction on there. So if you do want to read a cookbook, that counts.
And yeah, it's actually pretty heavy nonfiction in the adult collection.
That was kind of fun. And we've even got crafting books because there's a section that deals with that. So take credit for using a knitting book.
Oh, certainly.
That is reading, you know, so enjoy it, have fun. Kind of loosen up what you think. It doesn't have to be a really thick novel or a really thick work of history.
Yeah, there are also activities to do to help you.
Oh, very cool.
You don't have to read four books or three books. You can, you know, kind of shake it up a bit with some activities.
Yeah.
And I also want to stress that it's for everyone.
Yes, all
ages. We're talking kids, babies, adults, teens, read.
It's awesome. Okay, well, I'm going to dive in with a title that sort of ties into the reading theme because it's really about making some really comforting foods, and we have some of those cookbooks on those lists, but it's also a couple of my titles today are things that we didn't get to talk about last year.
Mm-hmm.
They're published either, this one was a bit earlier in 2021, but I just ran out of time to talk about it here, and I wanted to bring it to the podcast attention. So this one is Chetna's 30-Minute Indian. It's a cookbook by Chetna McCann, Quick and Easy Everyday Meals. And she was part of the British baking show at one point in time, or was on that British Bake Off. But this is all quick Indian cooking meals and some really delicious recipes, like making samosas, pastry samosas that are not super hard to make. I mean, this is a really, really short recipe for making those. Looks pretty accessible. Doesn't that sound cool?
Yes.
And cozy for winter.
Yes.
And they're not fried. They're baked, which is sort of cool.
That's actually really cool.
Yeah.
I want that book after you.
Okay. I'm showing this to my colleagues here. You can see they're really short recipes.
Yeah.
Yogurt chicken curry, but if you don't eat meat, there's an egg and cabbage curry, which sounded delicious to me. And she said that you don't usually find egg curries in some Indian cookbooks because many Hindus in India consider eggs to be a form of meat. Mm-hmm. But in this, she, you know, kind of branched out into different ways of sort of looking at Indian food. And then a mixed vegetable curry, and she encourages you to just kind of clear out your vegetable bin to put into this one. And again, it looks easy, has a little bit longer list, but they're all spices that you'd probably be able to get easily, especially in our community. We have lots of places to get them. So just a really excellent book that I didn't want to, you know, jump over. I wanted to talk about here. Chetna's 30-Minute Indian. I think winter is a nice time to sort of get into the kitchen, and you don't feel that pressure as much maybe to be outside. You can get inside and get cozy and get that accomplishment of making something for yourself.
Okay, so jumping off on the cooking theme and the didn't get to it last year theme, I want to talk about Cooking at Home by David Chang and Priya Krishna. Now, I have talked about David Chang before. I read his memoir, Eat a Peach, and I've watched different cooking shows that and things that he's done. But I like this book almost because it's kind of an anti-cookbook.
Oh.
It is very, or more, maybe more of a practical cookbook. This is not going to have, like, your measured recipes in it. It's really more of a teaching you to feel how to cook, or how to cook for you, because it's so very unique to you, the spices you like, the proteins, whatever, the starches. And it's actually quite interesting because it's Chang is Korean, Krishna is grown up Indian, eating Indian foods, and you've got almost a conversation and sometimes an argument happening in the book, because they really are just sort of want people to think about, you know, what's important to them. Remember that, you know, in a lot of cases you've got these family recipes that are passed down that never seem right when you get the, you know, try to work from a written recipe that somebody gives you. And it's because they didn't, you know, it's not something you really wrote down. You sort of did it by feel. And that's what they're just trying to get people to think about. But they have, in with all of that, they have most of the chapters begin with a scientific article from about cooking from a food scientist. But they also have, so he made an equipment checklist. And he kind of finishes out the list by, or the introduction saying, hey, you know, it's your kitchen, do whatever you want. And then the next thing is Krishna jumping in and saying, seriously, take this as a grain of salt. He was waffling on this whole thing from the beginning. And I don't. and it's really interesting because she is both a collaborator in the cookbook, but she's also kind of translating and writing for him. And she, you know, expresses that throughout the whole book, but you get various points where he's got a note, and then she's kind of follows it up with a note, sometimes contradicting or sometimes agreeing. And it's just an interesting conversation about how to cook. So it's just a fun read. And it's a lot of practical advice.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So, and that's Cooking at Home by David Chang and Priya Krishna.
Okay. Well, what do you think, Maddie? Both of those books sound really good. So I've got some picture books I want to recommend, and they're not nonfiction, but they cover nonfiction topics in some way, and I'm a big fan of getting kids to read nonfiction in small chunks, or in small introductory chunks, I could say. The first one is The Story of a Story. It's by Deborah Hopkinson, And this is the story of a little boy who is trying to write a story. Mm-hmm. And he's got maybe a case of writer's block, maybe just feeling stuck. It takes place in the winter. And spread or page after page, you know, there's just like him thinking and him getting frustrated. And the point, I think, for him and for, you know, anyone who struggles with writing or any kind of a project is, you know, little by little, one walks far. Eventually, he does get an idea and he starts to express himself and write. So I really, really like this because, you know, you think certain things are easy, writing, reading. Sometimes they're not, and they, you know, it takes persistence. So I really, really enjoyed that one. The next one I have is Brains! Exclamation point! Not just a zombie snack. This is by Stacy McNulty, and she writes really great books that cover, you know, nonfiction topics. I think this is a book that has like a little girl who's a zombie chef, speaking of.
Oh my gosh.
And, you know, she's really thinking that brains are really tasty. And basically, she's kind of leading us along the way, telling us all about brains, in particular human brains. You know, the fact that brains don't feel pain, but your fingers with nerves can have something happen that will send a message to your brain, and you will experience pain. She is talking about how really the brain is your boss. It's your the control center of everything in the human body that it inhabits. And I just really, really loved this book because it is really colorful, but it's that factoid part of yeah. a picture book that kind of gets kids thinking about themselves and their human form and everything that goes on inside. And then the last one I have is Chicken Frank Dinosaur. This is by S.K. Wenger. This is hilarious. It is about a chicken who is out to prove to his fellow farm comrade animals that he's descended from the almighty T-Rex.
Awesome.
And I'm talking about the dinosaur. So it's kind of an introduction to evolutionary change and inherited characteristics, you know, from all species of life and, you know, what DNA is about. It's got a really great back matter section where she does a lot of explaining, you know, and what is the connection between chickens and dinosaurs. Mm-hmm. It's really, really neat. And it's very funny, very, very funny, because there's a lot of resistance in his farm community to this idea. Really? How could you be related to the dinosaur? It's so cute. It's really cute.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
That's one of those concepts that, you know, I don't think when we were children they were telling us.
Nope.
Almost an adult.
Yeah, that's right. I think I was an adult.
Yeah, I really credit picture books. Either I wasn't reading them when I was a kid as much like this, or it's just this explosion of education.
Absolutely,
outside
yeah.
of
this is the sort of thing like, I don't remember ever exploring these topics when I was, you know, 5, 6, 7 years old. And they're presented in such a way that they're really little factoids that a parent can engage conversation with.
Yeah, that's really, really fun. Very cool. Well, I'm going to go back a little bit to 2021, rather. Whoa. Because there are just a few books, again, that I didn't want to miss. And I got at the very end of the year, just the way that they're published and that sort of thing. I didn't get to talk about them. So the first one is These Precious Days. They're essays by Ann Patchett. And Ann Patchett, as our listeners may know, is a novelist of 8 books, several essay collections, a few children's books, actually. But this particular essay collection is extremely wide-ranging, and it made me remember how much I love essays. I do really love essays, but I haven't read as many collections in the past couple of years. And it's because you get that wide range of topics. If you don't love one essay, you go on to the next. But this is just sort of they were all stars to me in this collection. It's pretty, it's a thicker book. There are a lot of different essays in there, and they range from so many different topics. I think that family features really heavily, and you know, Patchett going back and talking about her family. The first essay is about her 3 fathers, literally her father and her stepfathers in her life, and it's based on a photo that's included of all of them together. And then she goes and tells a story of each of the relationships that are of those men in her life and what they meant to her and their quirks and that sort of thing. It's excellent. It's a great start. She also writes about her mother, who I discovered is the novelist Jean Ray. I did not know before reading this book.
Yep.
Her dad actually worked a little bit with the Manson case, so that kind of gets in here. I mean, it's really a lot in here. There's a large title essay, These Precious Days, about her relationship with a woman named Suki Raphael, who is an artist from California, who was also Tom Hanks' assistant for about 20 years. And they form this friendship while Suki has pancreatic cancer. And because of a treatment that's available in Nashville, Suki comes and lives with Ann Patchett for a while and gets this treatment, and they do yoga together, and Suki paints. And it's during the beginning of the pandemic when there was a lot of lockdown. But it's just a very, really beautiful meditation on friendship, life, and death in that essay. She talks about her love of literature. She owns Parnassus Books in Nashville, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
Big essay on Kate DiCamillo, which is just fantastic. Her love of Eudora Welty made me want to go back and read Eudora Welty. And then her experience of being inducted into the American Academy of Arts and Letters and how she met many famous authors and just what that meant to her and what it means. They get a little card when one of the authors passes away and how that impacts her. So it's just a fantastic essay collection. But what comes across the most is her really strong, clear, calm conviction about who she is. And that frequently through this collection, people try to challenge that. And they doubt her. And that seems to come up a lot. And she stands strong in her convictions about who she is. So it's really, and about how people do that to men, but they do it a lot to women. And I think that comes a lot across in here. So just a fantastic book. And it's all a lot about love. Love for her family, love for her husband, who loves to fly airplanes and terrifies her a lot of the time. And then just love for the books and love for the world. So speaking of love, we go on to our next collection, which is really about love as well. It's called Worldly Things by Michael Kleber Diggs. He was the winner of the Max Ritvo Poetry Prize. This is published by Milkweed Press, which I know our listeners may know. I love Milkweed Press, small press out of Minnesota. Michael Kleber Diggs lives in Minnesota, and he won this prize. I came to his collection through a poem called America is Loving Me to Death, which is sort of a painful and powerful poem about American mythology, really, about who Americans are and what it means to be an American. And this collection it's just exquisite. I mean, every poem is fantastic. And it deals with some painful themes, also deals with beauty. And really, it's about a black man living in St. Paul, living in this world that we live in right now, in these times, and reckoning with it. Walking down the street, he's really open. He's like, I'm the nicest guy you'll ever meet, and having people cross the street. That's in a poem. It's painful. And how much he loves the world. He works with the Minnesota Prison Writers Project. He loves strangers. He's always trying to help them. He loves his family. He loves his artist daughter. So it's gorgeous. I encourage everybody to pick it up. It's Worldly Things by Michael Kleber Diggs. So those were two books that I'm really excited that I finally got a chance to read and wanted to bring today. All right.
Kind of, again, jumping off of, kind of going back through my TBR and or to be read pile and things that I had wanted to get to or have wanted to get to for a while, because one of them has been out for quite a while. I have both a mystery and a romance. So the mystery is The Unexpected Inheritance of Inspector Chopra by Vasim Khan. And actually, the other thing that these two have in common is I think both of them are on the list. I can't remember what the icon is, Madi, but it's the one that deals with human and animal relationships in the reading program.
It's not the polar bear. I can't quite remember.
It's okay. Don't worry about it. But there is a list that actually does deal with human and animal relationships, working with pets, and that sort of thing. Those are all topics that came up as we were putting this list together. And The Unexpected Inheritance of Inspector Chopra is the first book in the Baby Ganesh Agency series. And it opens, it's like on the day of his retirement, Inspector Ashwin Chopra gets two things. A note saying that an 8-month-old elephant is going to be delivered to him. He has inherited from his uncle. and the case of a drowned boy that no one seems to want solved at work. And he does what he can in his last day of work, but he can't let it go. So he, in his retirement, decides he's going to research and work, investigate this case of the drowned boy. And along the way, he's learning how to work with this very cute, slightly despondent, 8-month-old baby elephant. He lives in an apartment complex. This is complicated. There is a, because there's always one in books, there is a older woman in the complex who knows all the rules and regulations by heart and is very put out to find an elephant in the yard at the apartment complex. She is even more annoyed to find it on the 15th floor later in the book. But, you know, there are things. But on the other hand, his wife is the sort of person that, while in private, is looking around and thinking, what are we going to do with an elephant? When that other lady comes along and says, I know the rules and the regulations, his wife is the first person to say, you cannot tell us what to do. We have that elephant as long as we need to have that elephant. Oh, it's funny. It's a pretty serious case. So, I mean, it is. I mean, it starts with a murder. So it is a pretty serious case. But it's also done in conjunction with leading around an 8-month-old elephant in Mumbai. And it's quite a story, and I actually would really love to keep going with the series.
Yeah, it sounds
just
great.
He's an interesting character. His wife is definitely a character. And there are other side characters that are fun. And there's more to that elephant than there seems. There's just a little bit. We had talked about this a little bit yesterday, and there is a little bit of a mystical element to the elephant.
Very cool.
That is worth looking into. I'm very curious to see where they go with this. Now, the romance is called Better Than People by Roan Parish. This is the first book in the Garnet Run series by Parish. It introduces, in this particular title, it's an illustrator named Jack Matheson, who's been sort of hiding out after his writing partner basically steals an idea and then takes it to a publisher without him. And he's betrayed. He doesn't trust people anymore. He's withdrawn to his house in Wyoming. He's not talking to his brother, who he's very close to, and he's just mad at the world. But he's surrounded himself with this menagerie of animals. So he's got at least four dogs and 3 cats. He's at the very beginning of the book, he's out walking the dogs, led by one very proud cat leader. And their rescues, they all have their issues. One of the dogs kind of loses it and he gets pulled, and he ends up falling and breaking his leg. So this guy who doesn't trust people has to ask for help. So what he ends up doing is there's an app that people can volunteer to help people with their pets, and in walks Simon Burke, who suffers from severe anxiety. I mean, it's just, he can deal with animals. He cannot deal with people, and it's just so hard. But he loves the animals, and this is his one way of, he doesn't have any pets of his own at the moment, and he can't get them just because of his living situation at the moment. So this is his way of kind of connecting with animals, and this menagerie of animals takes to him immediately. And he starts walking to him, and over time, they kind of both come out of their shells. And it's just a really interesting look at the relationships between humans and animals, as well as severe anxiety and people all wanting to help but not being able to help, and people who have anxiety not being able to reach out the same way that they want to be able to. Yeah. It's really well handled.
Sounds so really good.
It was a really nice story. And it's, Roan Parish is actually this is the first of a series, but the third one actually is the first one Harlequin has ever released as a paperback LGBTQ story. So that was kind of neat when it was that Christmas book, The Lights on Knockbridge Lane.
Okay, very cool.
So, yeah.
Okay, so I've also been reading some books from last year. because it's, you know, hard to get a hold of the new stuff right now.
Can be.
But one that I had wanted to read all year long was is Alone by Megan Freeman. And this is a novel verse or a verse novel type of story. And it's about a 12-year-old girl living in Colorado. And the first thing I'm going to say is that this book was just stunning. I had heard about it, but didn't know too much about it. And I started reading it, and it's just the story that keeps drawing you in deeper and deeper about the sense of, like, I don't want to say tragedy, but like, oh my gosh, my world has just been turned upside down. Mm-hmm. The girl is trying to pull a fast one on her mom and dad. Her parents live separately. And she tells mom, "Mom, I'm going to dad's. Dad, I'm going to mom's." And she ends up going to her grandparents' place in the mountains. Her grandparents are not there. And she's invited a couple friends to join her, except the friends never show up for this little weekend event. When she gets back home, she finds that the whole town, maybe even the whole state, has been evacuated. And you don't really know why. You know that there have been some rumblings about some national incidents possibly about to happen. So she's by herself. She's been left behind. There are a bunch of animals in the neighborhood because the animals all had to be left behind. And she adopts one of the dogs. And, you know, she starts to eat through the food and thinks, well, eventually they'll come back. They'll realize that I'm missing and I'll come back. But it turns into something like 3 years or, I don't know, crazy. Whoa. And it is kind of the story of a child learning to survive on her own, but also maturing and, mm-hmm. you know, dealing with loneliness and trying to figure out family relationships, and also recognizing, like, digital and electronic usage. And, you know, she gets this kind of, like, clarity of mind and strength, and she doesn't have this anymore. There's, like, a crank radio that she finds at someone's house. So at one point, she's not even sure if the, what are those radios called?
Like a ham radio?
Ham radio, yeah. She's not even sure if what she's hearing is real mm-hmm. or if it's been, like, programmed in to make people think it's real. It's it's just definitely a book I would hand to any child that is interested in those survivalist sort of stories. And interested in seeing, you know, what is it like to have your whole world flipped? And not only flipped as you know it, but having to deal with it all by yourself. Mm. So I really, really like this story. The other one I want to talk about is The Electric Kingdom. And this is by David Arnold. This is a Y story or a young adult teen novel. And it's science fiction. I don't read a whole lot of science fiction, but, you know, once in a while I hear about a book that I'm like, I'm really going to challenge myself to try to read that book. And this is about basically a group of families, maybe many families, that end up being kind of isolated because of this flu caused by flies pandemic. And they basically have to board up all their windows because every once in a while in the stories, each chapter kind of focuses on a certain story or family unit, you hear these buzzes that are coming, oh no, there's a swarm coming, and everybody has to really hide inside their homes. And it's kind of the story of, again, like very pandemic-y sort of life where you're like wanting to kind of like, oh, I hope this never really happens, you know? But yeah, a daughter, you know, taking on, seeing both of her parents go through some form of dementia or something like that, that maybe is caused by the flies, maybe not. Just having to express, there's an artist who is constantly painting the same work of art, maybe in an effort to perfect it, which I think I've heard that artists do that. But, like, seriously, 600 times or something like that, and always, like, mm-hmm. just plastering it around their theater home where they're sequestered or left alone. But eventually they try to go off on their own, and it really is about courage and just crazy, crazy world, I guess.
Okay. Wow.
All right. What do you think?
That's sort of the... the lean in. We've talked about, you know, sometimes when you hit hard times, like, you know, the world has been going through, sort of lean into something darker, or you just want to read something lighter. And I think we all bring a mix. This book is probably a lean in book as well. And I wanted to bring this today because sadly, you know, at the end of the year and into January of the new year, we've lost a lot of beautiful people from the world. And one was the author Joan Didion. And Joan Didion, if you haven't read her, I would encourage you to really dive into anything. You can read about what you can read, what you can find about her. She passed away at the age of 87. Probably one of her more famous, more contemporary works is The Year of Magical Thinking, which is about the loss of her husband. And then if you go back, there are all sorts of journalistic works, you know, essay collections, a lot about California, about the 1960s, those types of pieces. But another memoir, this was actually my favorite, and it's not one of those favorites that are the fun favorites. It's a favorite because it's just an incredible book, is Blue Nights. And this is, again, one of my favorite books, but it's not that happy kind of favorite at all. But I think that while I read both The Year of Magical Thinking and this one, and they're very similar in the sense that they're books about grief and they're books about loss. Okay, so again, leaning in is kind of heavy, but they're very different. And this book is more specifically dealing with the loss of her daughter, Quintana Roo, but also about her aging and her illnesses. She ended up passing away of Parkinson's, and this is really the beginning. This story has her going to the doctor and experiencing sort of that loss that comes with serious illness, with illnesses that are difficult to figure out, ones that are literally slowing you down. People are worried about you. You're living alone, and they're calling, and you feel like you've lost that freedom. So it's about that, and then sort of just sort of facing what is aging and what's going to happen after that. But it's a meditation on love, love for her daughter, the experience of adopting her daughter, of becoming a mother. A lot about California made me want to go to Big Sur and just see, you know, this rocky, tempestuous, the water, and it's sort of a unforgiving almost landscape, just kind of stark and gorgeous. I'm always drawn to those kind of landscapes. But she is like the California author, you know, she brings that into her books. But there are a few things that repeat in this story, and they are the stephanotis in her daughter's braid when she was in her wedding, a plumeria tattoo that she could see through the veil during the wedding, and the bright red soles on her shoes. And those things are repeated all through the book. And it becomes sort of like this rhythmic sort of meditation on her daughter and on the memories of her daughter. And that the pain of the memories is also the love coming through. So it's really hard to talk about Joan Didion, really. It's something you really need to experience her writing. It's not... Mm-hmm. I often have books like that on the podcast, and this is one of them where it's like, I'm not going to talk about it too much because you really have to experience her writing to feel it and know why it's so moving and powerful.
Okay. Well, okay. So mine also deals with grief, but in a lighter way. My last book for today is Gunkle by Stephen Rowling. Lily and the Octopus was a big... cattle favorite for book discussions. This is that author. And Gunkle is, I feel like it's sort of a MAME-inspired humorous story, but it is, we're introduced to a reclusive actor who he's kind of withdrawn from the world. He's vaguely considering going back into actually working, but he doesn't have to, and he doesn't really feel ready for it. But also at the beginning of the book, he has lost his best friend from early in his career, and who is also his sister-in-law. And at the funeral, he and his brother spend a lot of time talking, and his brother basically comes to him and says, look, in those last months as she was dying of cancer, he had developed a substance abuse habit, and he needed to get himself together if he was going to be able to take care of their children, Maisie and Grant, who are 9 and 6. So he asked Patrick to take the kids for a few months. He's going to go into a rehab place that's closer to Patrick. And he wants Patrick to take the kids. Now, Patrick, at first, is not really... I mean, he loves visiting. He loves his nibblings. They're great to visit and have. But the idea of having to take responsibility for them is daunting. And
hear, hear.
He doesn't quite know. Really, seriously. He doesn't quite know how he's going to do this. And it becomes sort of, he agrees to do it, and the kids move to Arizona with him. And it becomes, and from the Northeast, I think. And it's a totally different thing for them. They've lost their mother. Their father is in rehab, so he's not in the area. And they have to kind of figure each other out. And what it does for Patrick is helping them with their grief forces him to face what made him leave Hollywood. And there's grief that he had not dealt with on a couple of different levels. I mean, there's the best friend who's just died, their mother, but there's another thing that comes out in the book that has never been dealt with. So it's really, there's a lot of humor. Gunkel is from Gay Uncle. The kids call him Gup for Gay Uncle Patrick. He's got friends coming by from the gay community, and then he's got his sister shows up, and his sister, you know, wants to challenge him for the guardianship of the kids, mostly because she's getting a divorce and is mad at her husband, so she's sort of taking it out on Patrick, and family gets messy, grief is messy, but it's actually a really heartwarming book as everybody kind of comes around to really figuring both themselves out and being able to help the kids.
Cool.
So it's just a fun look at grief.
Yeah.
I don't know how to quite say that, but it was a good read.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is really interesting. My last book also deals with grief. I wouldn't say it's fun, though, at least not so far. I have another teen novel. It's You've Reached Sam by Dustin Thal. This is a story about, it's kind of a romance, a little bit magical, but it really does, at least the part I'm in. I'm not that far in, but it's about a couple, and the man or the boy dies very early on. And the girl is in so much grief. She's decided that she's not attending the funeral. She's throwing out all of the stuff, all the memories that she has from being in this relationship for 3 years. She's in her senior year of high school. And she's kind of like denying his family the opportunity to pay her respects and to, you know, tell them how sorry she is that he's passed away. And it's really quite off-putting to the family, at least in the bits that I've read. But it's just this really interesting look at anxiety and grief mixed together, especially from the point of view of someone who doesn't want to, give in to people's expectations of her, of what the right thing is to do when someone passes away. But anyway, she ends up making a connection with her deceased boyfriend through her cell phone. She calls and he answers. So it's this very interesting look about how they, you know, they end up discussing their relationship, the untimeliness of his death, and how, you know, it wasn't her fault, because she feels a lot of guilt. I won't give it away, but she is somehow involved in what, I wouldn't say what causes his death, but she's connected to the whole story in some way. I really like these kind of stories where there's like something, where you're talking to someone from the other world, and you're trying to tie up loose ends, I guess you could say, so that she can move on. Because that's really her point in like wanting to not go to the funeral, wanting to throw away all the stuff he gave her so that she doesn't have to deal with it and she can just move on. But you don't do that after a week or two, right? Mm-hmm. With any kind of a close relationship. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's You've Reached Sam by Dustin Thau, and he is a new author.
It is in all the different approaches on dealing with grief.
Yeah.
And it feels, again, we're still in a pandemic. It feels appropriate to have all the different views or you know, the examples out there to understand that nobody deals with it the same way necessarily. Right. It's going to be different for everybody. It's not quick. It's mm-hmm. not, you know.
Yeah.
It's not obvious either.
Right.
So that's, I appreciate the variety in that sense.
Yeah. And even if we try to stay away from it, it seems to come up in our reading because it's part of the human condition, and mm-hmm. especially right now. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's just going to keep coming
yeah.
up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Okay. And we hopefully have brought a variety so that if it isn't your thing, there's some other things to look at, like baby elephants that are living in a pie rise.
Show up exactly when you need them, even though you left them on the other side of town.
See, there you go. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. We all kind of need one of those. Mm-hmm. That would help.
The fact that you can get a baby elephant up 15 floors with a freight elevator, obviously, and through an apartment door with the effect, with the help of somebody shoving it from behind. Nine months is probably not going to fit through a door.
No, this is not sustainable.
No. And he really, really loves Cadbury milk.
Mm.
He's rather addicted.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
So, yeah.
Well, right, thank you.
Really nice chatting with you. I hope you all found something in all of this to kind of go grab and participate in the winter reading program.
Yeah.
Join us.
Time to read.
Yeah. All right.
All right.
Have a good one.
Till next month.
Thank you.